This is a CBC podcast. Have you ever had a brilliant idea for CBC radio programming? Well, then pitch it. Submit your ideas for anything from comedy to drama, from DNTO to The Current at cbc.ca/pitch.
It's Wednesday, July 28th. Senior RCMP officials are complaining that Commissioner William Elliott is abusive and insulting. On one occasion, he threw papers at another top officer. Currently, Elliott says he threw the papers because the officer was brandishing a stapler. This is The Current Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the summer edition of The Current. I'm Jim Brown. You've no doubt heard about wildlife affected by the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico and seen the images of oil-soaked birds, hundreds of which have died or been rehabilitated so far. But experts say the situation is about to get much worse when millions of migratory birds arrive in the Gulf region to stay for the winter or stop over on their way to their final destination. Among those millions are many species of Canadian birds, and that has a lot of Canadian bird watchers and experts very worried that once our birds head south, they won't ever come back, which means sounds like this could disappear from the Canadian landscape. That's the sound of a colony of purple martins. They are common swallows found across much of southern Canada, and they represent just one of the species experts say could suffer when the time comes for them to migrate south.
Because we know that these purple martins actually stop right along that Gulf Coast before they launch off across the Gulf to land in Mexico, I think they're actually quite vulnerable to these kind of more subtle effects. You're not going to see purple martins covered in oil like we do with pelicans and gannets. But on the other hand, there could be really big effects because they have such a marathon journey ahead of them to go all the way to Brazil. These birds race down to Mexico at a speed that astounds me, and they require huge amounts of food in order to complete this journey. But what I'm worried about is that because they're programmed to go so fast, that they'll take off across the Gulf, but they won't have the energy to actually make the trip to Mexico. And so we're worried that we're actually going to see quite low return rates next year.
That was Bridget Stutchbury, the Canadian Research Chair in Ecology and Conservation Biology at York University and author of Silence of the Songbirds. And she's not the only one concerned about the oil spill's effect on our migratory birds. Margot Zravkovic is Director of Coastal Bird Conservation. That's a program involved in the research, monitoring, and protection of coastal birds and their habitats. She led the first comprehensive survey of beach nesting birds along the Gulf Coast throughout the early to mid-2000s. Margot Zravkovic is in Big Pine Key, Florida, this morning. Hello.
Morning, Joe.
Thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
Now, I know your team is on the ground now in coastal Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida. How would you describe the state of the bird habitats that they're seeing?
Well, there's a variety of different conditions that we're seeing out there that we've been documenting for the past approximately 3 months now. We began our surveys before the spill made landfall in around mid-April, and we were working in coastal Louisiana doing the second statewide census there for beach nesting birds. We did the first one in 05. This had been planned a year ahead of time. We stayed on schedule and were able to cover most of the areas before the oil did make landfall. But we basically watched it come in. It was very frustrating. It didn't seemed like much effort was being done then there in the beginning to stop the oil from coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Then we came to areas that had been oiled for 4 weeks after landfall that still weren't cleaned up. So we've seen a mix of birds and damages to birds and their habitats where we work with the beach nesting birds and we do these surveys on foot trying to document all beach nesting pairs. And those birds are the plovers, American oyster catchers, plovers, Wilson's plovers, snowy plovers. And they are usually feeding in the tide line, and they would become oiled by foraging for food, and then they'd begin to get some oil on their bodies, and that's, you know, very foreign to them.
Right.
Their behavior would be to preen, constantly preening, then go back into the water to try and clean that oil off.
And that just makes it worse, I guess.
And make the situation worse, right? The other birds we work with are the tern species. So mm-hmm. those are plunge divers. They feed on fish. Those birds could come in direct contact with slicks on the water. Now, we weren't seeing birds like the pelicans that look like they're totally dipped in oil. The birds we work with weren't getting impacted quite in those ways, but the impacts were still there. And so we'd been documenting every oiled bird we saw. We photographed them whenever possible.
How many have you seen?
Well, we haven't put together all the numbers yet, and there are varying degrees from trace to moderate to severe, depending on where that bird has been. And obviously the birds in Louisiana were getting more oil than the other areas surrounding. When you talk about Mississippi and Alabama and then the Florida Panhandle, the situation changes somewhat, where the reaction for the birds they had to contend with for the entire breeding season once the oil made landfall was heavy disturbance from pre-landfall activities, berming, closing berms and inlets, building dunes to keep the oil from going into these areas, booming, and then actual post-spill cleanup activities where there was a lot of raking and crews out there, which are still out there in some areas, especially in Florida. It's a mixed situation out there of what's going on for these birds. And, of course, now the migrating species are coming through, and it's all going to begin again for them.
So the people who are going out trying to improve the situation are, in some aspects, making it worse for the birds.
Absolutely. And, of course, we are for every effort that can be done to keep the oil out of the sensitive areas. It's going to be a tough season, or probably has been a tough season, for our beach nesting birds. One season is, you know, they can get through that. What we have to make sure is that this doesn't keep continuing. Disturbance is very serious for the migratory birds as well. If they don't feed in the areas they need to feed, forage, and get food supply they need to fatten up, they won't survive the migration to the next area they have to go. So these stopover sites are very important to them.
So what are they going to encounter? What will the situation be when these migratory birds from the north arrive there? They're tired, they're hungry, they've been flying a long time. What are they going to come up against?
Exactly, and it's going to depend which areas are their normal migration stops, which they're going to stick with. They're programmed to do that. Some areas, where it's Louisiana, they're going to encounter oil, and if it's fresh oil, that's going to be very dangerous to them. It's mm-hmm. the freshest oil and the slicks the most toxic and damaging to them. After the oil stays out there for several weeks, it becomes waxy and harder. It's still not good, but it's not quite as damaging to the birds that are moving through the area. If you look at where the oil is, where it tapers off and there isn't as much of it, where it's become tar balls, the cleanup efforts in Florida are incredible due to the tourist beaches, and there's a lot of disturbance there. The birds probably won't be able to rest in those areas. They'll be continually flushed, and I probably move on to their next sites.
Now, I mentioned the purple martin, a common bird here in Canada. How do you think birds like the martin are going to do when they get down to the Gulf?
Well, they will be in a, you know, tired and exhausted state, most likely, and need to fuel up. So it could be a serious situation for them. The other concern is the food source. Will the food source that they need be there? And that depends on how impacted the area is. Of course, with the shorebirds, we're talking about impacts to the food source that comes from the tides, from the tide line, from the water, and various aquatic inverts and polychaete worms and things like that that these birds need to feed on may themselves be damaged, which will cause the bird to have to move somewhere else
right.
to find that food source.
Ms. Zdravkovic, thank you once again for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It's Margo Zdravkovic, Director of Coastal Bird Conservation, and she joined us from Big Pine Key, Florida. Now, many of the migratory birds heading down to the Gulf of Mexico will begin their journeys in the Canadian Arctic, the Saskatchewan wetlands, the boreal forest, and Atlantic Canada's great waterfowl colonies. And from those places, they'll be flying directly into potential danger. That's causing great concern to Ted Chesky. He's the manager of bird conservation at Nature Canada, and he joins me now from our Ottawa studio. Good morning, Ted Chesky.
Hey, good morning, Jim.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Now, we've heard how important the Gulf Coast is to the purple martin. Can you give us a sense of how important this area is to other Canadian migratory birds?
Well, I would describe it as kind of the crossroads of the Americas for probably the balance of birds in Canada. About 90% of the birds that breed in our country leave in the summer and the fall. And a large proportion of them end up down in the Gulf, stopping over or continuing on to Central South America, the Caribbean. Lots of them will spend the winter there as well. So mm-hmm. we're talking potentially hundreds of millions of birds at least that use the Gulf for feeding areas, for wintering areas.
With some species, has the migratory process already started?
Yeah, I've seen pictures of beach cleanup efforts, and there are shorebirds, one called sanderlings and dunlins, that are running along in front of the people cleaning, and those are birds from our Arctic. Mm-hmm. There are common loons, which the iconic loon across the country. The immature birds, they take a few years to reach sexual maturity. They stay down in the Gulf and in the Atlantic and in places where they go after they're born. And same with probably northern gannet. So there are some birds that are down there for, even over the summer. But the shorebird migration has started, and certainly there are shorebirds arriving there.
So a loon born in Canada could spend a year or more down in the Gulf before migrating back.
Exactly.
I see. I'd like you to listen to a little bit of tape now. This is Bill Montevecchi. He's a professor of ocean sciences at Memorial University. And CBC Radio St. John's producer Marie Wadden spoke with him about the tens of thousands of white gannets that nest and raise their chicks in Newfoundland.
There are just 6 colonies for gannets in North America. One of the most spectacular ones in the entire world is at Cape St. Mary's. It's just this magnificent mountain of white birds on a cliff. It looks like a snow-covered cliff, and there's about 12,000 pairs of gannets there. The largest colony in North America, and perhaps we think it's the largest colony in the world, is in Quebec in the Gulf of St. Lawrence on Bonaventure Island, and there's well over 100,000 birds there. Come the end of September, the young gannets will start jumping off the cliffs, and believe it or not, at that time they can't fly, so they jump off these 300-foot cliffs, they blast into the water if they don't hit a rock, they sort of swim off from Newfoundland to Nova Scotia. After about maybe 2 weeks they can fly, and somehow they do this completely independently of their parents, who stay on the cliffs and start courting one another again. They make their way down the continental shelf, and we know that about 20% of our birds actually go into the Gulf of Mexico. We know that our young birds stay in there longer than the adults, and that 20%, we're talking about thousands, maybe tens of thousands of birds from Canada getting into the Gulf of Mexico. They've evolved in a clean ocean. Their migration is somehow just fixed for the individuals, and the ones that go back there are going to go back there. And if there's oil there, a good chunk of those birds are going to be oiled.
That's Bill Montevecchi. He's a professor of ocean sciences at Memorial University. My guest this morning is Ted Chesky, the manager of bird conservation at Nature Canada. The kinds of things that Bill Montevecchi is talking about, I mean, it sounds like the potential could be massive here for damage to these gannet stocks.
That's very worrying. Bill speaks very fondly of the gannets, and I think lots of Canadians have probably visited the colonies that he's talking about at Bonaventure and Cape St. Mary's, and anyone living along the ocean knows about these birds, so... the thought of large numbers of them coming in contact with oil and not returning is depressing thought. And it's one of the oil spill is one of lots of other threats that these birds face. And I think a lot of conservationists and scientists are worried about a catastrophe like this could really be a tipping point in some populations.
What species are you most concerned about?
Well, there are some species that are small, that have small populations that nest partly or entirely in Canada, and that use the Gulf. And those ones are obviously the ones that are most at risk. I could list some of them. Right, one of the shorebirds we were talking about shorebirds earlier is the piping plover,
right?
That nests in the Atlantic. There's an Atlantic population. There's a small population in Ontario now, and that's just establishing itself, and one in the prairies. And a lot of the important bird areas along the coastline of the Gulf are extremely important wintering sites for piping plovers. The adults leave the nest. This is true for a lot of shorebirds, shortly after the young hatch, and they're able to kind of look after themselves. They're already down there. They're arriving now. And
so
that's
one
species.
Isn't that a protected species as well, the piping plover? Or at least
it is an endangered species in Canada.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. There's a few others like that, too. The red knot. There's a race of the red knot, another shorebird from the high Arctic that gathers in large numbers in James Bay on the way down. And there's a large number of red knots that use the Gulf Coast. And one of, probably one of the most vulnerable ones we worry about is the whooping crane.
Mm-hmm.
The whooping crane, there's, a few hundred wild birds in total. They all nest in Wood Buffalo National Park in northern Alberta and Northwest Territories. And that entire population goes to the coast of Texas, which hasn't been affected too much yet, but the potential is there. And there are other populations, the American white pelican, probably 50% or so of its entire global population ends up down on the Gulf as well. Lots of species of waterfowl, and I mentioned the common loon. Most of the loons from around the western Great Lakes, southern Great Lakes, Lake Superior, probably end up down in the Gulf as well.
Now, I just want to talk a little bit about some of the things that possibly we can do to help mitigate some of these problems. Again, another short piece of tape from Bill Monavecchi, because he's hoping to secure a few $100,000 to invest in a tagging and tracking program.
At the end of the day, why this is so important is when, the governments of the United States and potentially Canada go to, the litigations with British Petroleum, it's a body count that you come up with. And, we've got the body count for humans, and we've got really gross underestimates for birds. And it's that body count, as it was in the Exxon Valdez, that will really determine the level of litigation, which I hope in the long run will determine the level of prevention of these kind of things in the future. So that's, to my mind right now, why this is a really, really important exercise.
So, Ted Chesky, if we're serious about taking a clear inventory of these migratory birds, what would the cost be?
Well, it's to establish monitoring protocols and do the proper science. It's certainly expensive, but there's lots of money that we're hearing that BP is losing. They lost $17 billion, I think, in the last quarter, but they're still making money. This is a very, very wealthy company. And I think the cost, there's no cost really that's too great to protect our biodiversity or our wildlife. And we need to be investing in that. And we definitely are underinvesting. We think of, the Syncrude ducks, the 1,600 ducks that died in the Syncrude ponds in the tar sands area. My understanding is the Syncrude is being fined. I don't know if an amount has been determined per duck, but that's a fine levied under the Migratory Bird Convention Act, and it's a deterrent. And it's another point of the fines is to understand the risk involved in taking these highly risky activities of extracting oil from beneath the seabed in places where maybe it's too dangerous to do.
Now, we're very, very close to being out of time, but I'm wondering if there are any policy directions, any kind of protection for wildlife that you'd like to see put in place as a result of this spill?
Well, speaking from a Canadian point of view, I think we have an awful lot to learn. Just prior to the spill starting, there was a lot of pressure on our government. And in fact, there has been for several years to relax policies to, for example, do offshore drilling.
Mm-hmm.
We have a protected area system in Canada, national wildlife areas, migratory bird sanctuaries. Few people realize that the resources beneath there, the subsurface resources, can be exploited. There's a national wildlife area in Suffield where there's a proposal to put in 1,300
right.
gas wells. There's a proposal to put a pipeline across the Rockies and start shipping oil.
There's a lot to go through, but I'm sorry to throw a big question at you with absolutely no time to respond, but we are right out of time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Oh, you're welcome.
Ted Chesky, Manager of Bird Conservation at Nature Canada. He's in Ottawa. Well, that's it for this podcast. If you have any thoughts about what you're hearing on The Current, send us your comments. Just visit our website at cbc.ca/thecurrent. and click on Contact Us. You can also find us on Twitter at TheCurrentCBC or search us on Facebook at CBC Radio The Current. Thanks for listening to The Current Podcast. I'm Jim Brown.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.